You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops, on hoopfeed.com.
Hi, everybody. It's David Siegel welcoming you to another Dishin' and Swishin' podcast here on Hoopfeed. And I have a very, very special guest this week. She was one of the greatest collegiate players to ever play women's basketball. She's one of the greatest players in WNBA and, of course, one of the greatest in USA basketball history. And she is still blazing trails, even in retirement from the game, in business and also in basketball, as she has become the first WNBA player to be an owner and a businesswoman and is forming the Lisa Leslie Basketball and Leadership Academy this spring. And I welcome Lisa Leslie to Dishin' and Swishin'. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you, David. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. When you first started all of this, all the way back then, now, did you think that by this point in your life, I mean, come on, you are still so young, and here you are a team owner and doing this academy, and boy, what a life.
Well, I just have always been a goal setter ever since the ninth grade, and I found that by writing down my short-term goals and long-term goals, it's really helped me to stay focused and just pursue the things that make me happy, whether it's basketball or modeling or broadcasting. Those are the things that I've always wanted to do. And through, you know, staying focused on my education and simply following my goals, I've been able to accomplish those things. So I always say I attack life pretty much the same way I attack basketball, and that's giving it 100%. And so since retiring, obviously I still write down my goals, and there's different things that I wanted to accomplish. And being, giving back and being part of the Sparks obviously is one of them. But that's just one of many. I've always loved being a role model and having the opportunity to start my own academy, which is, like you said, the Lisa Leslie Basketball and Leadership Academy. It's not just about basketball skills, which are great, and I love sharing the knowledge of the 25 years of basketball that I played with the kids, but it's also about the leadership and giving them the skills for life. Life is definitely a competition, so you have to teach kids how to compete. So you really take so many things that come from basketball that apply to life, and I just look forward to sharing that with all of those kids in my academy.
You know, it's funny. You hear about camps and academies and things throughout the country and at different levels, and in reading some of the promotional information that I have on the academy, you ask a question in there that seems so basic and is so often overlooked, and that is, why limit the information at the developing stage that's needed to succeed in high school, college, and professional level? And that applies to all aspects of life, but it's true. You know, that it seems that, you know, we sometimes treat the younger kids, you know, like not little people.
Well, I'm glad you caught that, because it's important that I don't know why we teach kids sports or anything, sort of a baby way, and then you have to retrain them. It's kind of like when you have a baby and you teach babies like baba and dada and papa, you know, little words that makes no sense. And so then they have to relearn sort of the English language by the time they're 4 and 5, as opposed to talking to them, you know, in proper English from the start. And so it's the same thing that applies in basketball. When you have these kids, why people don't teach them what help side is and sort of being able to see the ball in their player from day one, it really doesn't make sense. But we'll just teach them sort of how to guard the ball and hog the ball and wrap their arms around the other kid and try to get the ball. But we don't teach them the proper skills and techniques or the proper terminologies from day one. So that's really what my academy is really focusing on, is teaching the kids, you know, the same skills that you would learn and the same terminologies that you would hear if you were attending a Los Angeles Sparks practice or a Laker practice. And that's just one aspect. We're also offering tutoring because, as you know, I've always been an advocate of being a student athlete and being a student first. And so I want to make sure that our kids are on track, whether they're, you know, in junior high school or high school, that they're taking the proper classes that will help further their education and hopefully get them to college.
And as you mentioned, that is something that is so crucial, is the education. I mean, especially at least with the girls at this point, they're not going to be making big money most likely playing basketball, even the best of them, as so many of you have found out. But it is important also to point out that this is also an academy for boys, as you mentioned, the Lakers practice, that it is not just a girls' game.
Well, to the point that you made, even the men who make big money doesn't make them any smarter than anyone else, and a lot of those men still don't have their money because they may not be educated. So let's promote education first so that if you make money, whatever, big money is to a person, it's still important to be able to manage that money and how to invest that money. So those are the types of things that we're missing out. And it's funny you say that because kids think that if you make a lot of money that's the end-all be-all, but we can name probably 50 people who've made millions of dollars and who have 0 cents right now to show for it, and that's because they didn't necessarily have the education to go along with making money. So it's not about just having a lot of money or having sort of this goal of being a professional athlete and making a lot of money, but it's really about having the education and understanding whether you have a little bit or a lot, how do you make it a lot, how do you invest it, and how do you survive for the long haul, which is your lifespan, not just in the now.
This is true. That is absolutely 100% correct, and thank you for correcting my mistake on that and pointing out that it really is something that applies to everybody regardless of it, especially as this week when I read about Lee Steinberg, one of the great agents, going bankrupt. You would think that somebody that was an agent for so many people knows how to handle their money. But there
exactly.
Just goes to show you.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It just goes about, that's why we have to turn, the spotlight off of people who make a lot of money or what we think a celebrity is, whether it's an athlete or an entertainer. But it's about that education and understanding how to invest your money, how to, sort of be successful in your life. And a lot of people, they do live in the now. For, like you said, Lee to be bankrupt, I mean, gosh, we can name how many athletes did he have that just made, millions of dollars, and how could he be out of money? You ask yourself that, but when you live beyond your means, or if you are spending, at a rate that you don't look at consistently, you may not always make that amount of money, over 20-year span. That's going to be important, how you invest it and how you live.
Well, let's talk for a second about one of your recent investments, and that's bringing the career full circle. So now that you've gone through the origination of the WNBA and being one of the faces, the big three, of course, as the league was formed, to now being a part owner and a member of the ownership group. So how does it feel to walk around and take a look around and say, I own part of this?
It feels great, but more importantly, I think it's just about, one, being a role model for a lot of the players that are in the league. It's important for us to invest into ourselves and to our league, and to also for the fans. We've had so many great fans to support the WNBA. I think it's something that I would have loved to do earlier, and that is to be a part of the Sparks in a way and, having ownership. But I think even bigger than that, our community. I think it's a great, it speaks volumes in our community, and so many people want to come back. We need to get some supporters back that we've had, some season ticket holders, and hopefully increase that. With our sponsors, we always love having our WNBA Sparks sponsors, and we would like to continue to increase that. So it's really about building community, and however I can leverage, that in my name and helping lead by example, but also bringing more people in. That's what I want to do, because I always say it's not our fault that we were born girls. We just want to play too and to have our place in a professional league. We're very thankful, and we don't take that for granted. That's why when you if you come out to a Sparks game, you'll see it's very family oriented. The players will stop and sign autographs and hit the children's hand, and we do different clinics, and so we get it. It's about more than just ourselves, and it's about giving back, and not just giving back, of our time, but also of our money.
I assume that most of your time is going to be spent, as you mentioned, in the community outreach and in the promotion and letting the people that you hire to do the basketball.
Oh, absolutely. It's no one's here micromanaging. That's the beauty of it, is that, we have a great coach in Carol Ross. I feel very confident in, that hire, and we're looking forward to her doing, great things. But by any means, no one's going to be telling, Coach Ross, you know, what she needs to do. If she asks, that's different. Obviously, we all have basketball expertise surrounding her, but, you know, it's going to be great to see her, you know, get us back to, you know, the level of winning championships, and that's really what it's about in L.A. You know, anything short of a championship is a disappointing season, and that's just the way that, you know, we've always thought from day one.
And Carol is absolutely a tremendous hire, and I was really excited to see that. She got an opportunity, especially with a team with the talent that's there, a veteran-laden team like the Sparks. I think that she's going to be a difference maker. Always respected her abilities to coach, and she's going to get some of these people that are not necessarily so defensively inclined really working that defense. I know that.
Well, it's old, it's a cliche, but it's true. Defense wins championships, and if you got to start there, and you have to have something to hang your hat on. So I'm looking forward to the changes and the direction that Coach Ross will take the Los Angeles Sparks.
Now, you always were a prime defender. You were. Was that something that in particular you took pride in, your ability to defend around the basket and also your mobility to get out and make things happen in other places on the court as well?
Well, absolutely. I just love playing defense. I love the fact that I could, you know, guard my player, but always, you know, on the lookout for anybody else who needs help. I think when you're the center, you know, you're the last line of defense, and you should be there every single play, no matter how often it calls, you know, for you to rotate and help your teammates. And, you know, the good thing is that while I was helping my teammates, there was always another player there to help me, and that really helps build confidence. Which allows your guards to be able to extend their defense and put pressure because you know that you're always going to have help. And that's really the key. A lot of players don't necessarily buy into it, or players are just really sucked into the whole individual of, you know, hey, I'm just going to stop my player. But it's a team game. One person doesn't score on you. They score on your whole team. You know, one player doesn't get 35 like, oh, man, she really took it to her. No, she took it to our team. And so the concept of team is always really big. For me, and defense is where it started.
How long did it take for you to overcome that feeling of wanting to get back on the court if you saw the team struggling?
You mean since I retired?
Yes.
No, I've never wanted to get back on the court. I think the hard part, maybe when Candace got hurt, you know, I just feel bad, like, oh, gosh, you know, again, you know, she got hurt, and then, you know, we're sort of one player away, and that's the hard part. But in terms of, like, truly wanting to lace up and get back out there, no, I've been really good with the position and direction that I've gone in, you know, with my family and children. I feel great about, you know, taking on, you know, being a businesswoman. And, you know, my job now is it's at a desk. So, but I have a good time. Most of the time I work from home. So I'm here with my family, my husband, my kids, and it's the best job I could have.
Well, when we talked to Carol after she was hired, we discussed the idea of putting Candace in bubble wrap while she's playing overseas.
I know. It's been so weird. She does well overseas too. But, you know, hopefully, you know, we just pray that she stays healthy and can come back and complete a, you know, a WNBA season. Every time she comes back, she's, you know, in the top scoring and rebounding and blocking shots, and we just need to get through a full season with her, you know, being healthy. And I think, you know, then we can throw the, you know, the chips will land where they may if we just have a healthy team throughout the whole season.
Boy, and that number one draft pick is looking very interesting, I'm sure.
Oh, we are so excited about the draft on April 16th, and then we obviously start our season on May 18th, opening up against Seattle at Seattle, and then at home on the 20th. So we're excited about the draft. Obviously, you know, there's a few different prospects out there that could really be a difference maker, and I'm just happy that we have the number one pick.
It will be very interesting to see how the scenarios play out with these potentially eligible underclassmen, whether they decide that the idea of playing for L.A. is something that is exciting. But having that number one pick, even if it's just NECA.
I don't know what kid wouldn't think L.A. would be the most exciting place to play. It's a great organization and franchise. I think it's, you know, first class, and everyone's well taken care of. So, of course, L.A. always gets my vote.
Well, I'll just make sure that, you know, when I talk to people from Baylor and Delaware and Notre Dame, I'll play that part of this interview.
Yes, you do.
The one thing that I would say probably, in my opinion at least, defined your career more than anything else is the Olympic Games and the fact that you were so successful and you seemed to just, you know, all you had tremendous players beside you, but you were always the person that seemed to have that will that made the USA team dominant, that gave it the swagger that was so important. For one second, could you talk for a second about just what it's like being on that podium and hearing the national anthem, because it seems to mean so much to you.
It does. It's amazing. I think it's one thing to represent my city playing here in L.A., and I love wearing the purple and gold, but when you put on the red, white, and blue, you know, you're representing our country, and our country is very valuable to me. I've been all over the world and seen how other, you know, people have lived, whether they're very fortunate or unfortunate. I just feel like we're very blessed, and you know, I think I've always compared it to being sort of fighting for our country, whether, you know, it's never in the Air Force or Army or Navy, but, you know, it's really, I've always taken it like that feeling that we're fighting for our country and you want to be number one and you want to see our flag hanging at the top. And that's sort of what has always driven me, that it's a battle and people have given their lives for our country and for our flag. So for us to have the opportunity to battle other countries in a safe way on the court, you know, I've always kept that sort of in the forefront of my mind. And you never take the game for granted. And so whether I was playing, you know, on the Olympic team or, you know, on the Sparks, I've always known that, you know, you always have the possibility of this being your last game. So don't take it for granted. Give it your all. And the beauty about playing on the USA team, though, is that you only have to worry about yourself. You only have to worry about your one position. When I play for the Sparks, it's more of a, you know, as the captain of the Sparks, you have to really pull people and make sure everybody sort of knows what they should be doing and, you know, really help assist them a little bit more. On the USA team, you don't have to do that. I mean, I've had Teresa Edwards and Dawn Staley, people who they just lead, and all you do is run the floor, get on the block, and do what you're supposed to do. And so for me, it was always the easiest time of playing because I just had to do what was expected of me in my role. And that was to defend the crap out of anybody in the paint and, you know, on the defensive end and then offensively get down there. And if it's a one-on-one, score, and if it's not, kick it out. So it really wasn't that hard, you know, other than, you know, the pursuit of the ball. I mean, those are the things you think about in terms of winning. You got to get the ball.
You know, there were always good posts. You, Yolanda, you know, there was always some dominant people inside that I always loved the people that go inside and do the dirty work and do the things that they got to do. You look today and you see Tina Charles and Sylvia Fowles and Brittany Griner. Got to do a center like you proud to know that the center position is being manned by some serious talent out there now, and it just seems to be getting stronger and stronger.
Oh, I love it. I think, you know, if you talk to girls that I have spoken to, all of those that you name, you know, they've looked up to me, they've admired me, they've watched my tape, and I think that is great when you see players really honing their skills and wanting to get better, because part of it is just the desire to want to get better. I was a student of the game, regardless of what level I was on. There's always something else that I could learn, and I find that a lot of those young girls, they have that same type of drive, and that's really the key. You want to get better. You know, when I would play with Sylvia on our first USA team, I mean, every day Sylvia comes and she's so happy. She's like, teach me something. Show me something, you know. And I'm like, okay, let's go. Get on the block, you know. And I'd show her a new move or do something different. And that's what I loved about, you know, the younger class that came in, was just the fact that they were hungry and they wanted to learn. Because sometimes you have some of the younger players and they're just like, whatever, you know, they could care less. And so I must say, you know, even when Sue and Diana, you know, joined us, they were very hungry and open to learning. And that was the beautiful thing, is that when you pass that torch on to the other players, you know, attitude is everything. And I was that way. When I joined Katrina McClain and Teresa Edwards, I mean, like every day it's like, okay, you did not drop Teresa Edwards' pass, no matter what. I don't care if you got to dive out of bounds, throw it back in, like you don't drop the ball. You know, and those types of, you know, that level of play, that winning attitude was something that I learned from them and something that I've also passed on to some of the younger girls.
You know, one of the things that you've had been very fortunate that you've had some great point guards to play with. that have been so good at getting you the ball. And one of the things that is a complaint of mine about the game these days, just seems there's a shortage of people that can make that good entry pass into those posts. And, you know, the posts are fighting an uphill battle as is, trying the way they get pushed around and shoved around, that it just seems there's a shortage of people that can actually get them that ball in a position where they can do something with it.
Well, two things are happening to post entry. Number one, a player must be able to pass off the dribble, which is a lot of players can't do that, and some of the great point guards that I play with were the best at that. Don Staley and Nikki Teasley come to my mind first. But the fact that they could, you know, dribble, call a play, and still make a pass off that dribble without picking it up, having to make it with a two-hand pass, even though a lot of coaches don't teach that, but the great players could do that. The other thing is the angle of the post. A lot of times posts do something that we call Statue of Liberty, where they have one hand sort of open, but they're a swinging gate, which doesn't allow the guard to have a very good angle. But the most important thing I found was you have to have both your shoulders facing your passer. Whoever's passing you the ball, if both your shoulders and your numbers are facing that passer, then you're more likely to receive the pass. So a lot of that has to do with positioning and just the knowledge of the game and understanding how to get the ball.
Well, I'll tell you, based on everything that you just said, I'm going to back off some of my criticism of the point guards, because a lot of what you just said is true. That I, now that I think about it, I see a lot of posts at that angle, that they're not squaring up and giving both shoulders and presenting their numbers.
Absolutely, and that makes it a tough pass, and a lot of times you'll see, even last night watching the Notre Dame-Tennessee game, a lot of those passes just go sailing right out of bounds because you don't have the proper angle. And even though the guard's making the pass to the open player, but it's really the post who is not giving her the proper angle to catch that pass.
Well,
of many things that can be taught at the Lisa Leslie Basketball and Leadership Academy.
Which segues us right into this, as where I was about to go, as I was going to say, thank you very much for taking the time this morning, and I really do appreciate it. And as I've said, you know, I have spent countless hours enjoying your game, and, you know, my daughter, you have always been one of her favorites as well, and, you know, I think that you bring so much to this Lisa Leslie Academy that it's going to be phenomenal for people to be a part of. So when does registration, is it open yet? I mean, and
yes,
can you tell
David,
us where they can find information?
Yes, you can go to www.lisaleslie9.com, and you can sign up today. You can also follow me on Twitter at Lisa Leslie and get more updates.
And the academy is at the Westwood Sports Complex in Los Angeles.
It is. It is at the Westwood. You're right. You got all the information. I'm really excited because I think that it's a great location. I really want to create a very diverse atmosphere, and it's for kids ages 7 to 18.
And the first 50 students to pre-register get a free month, and that's something that is definitely something that people should be taking advantage of. And I'm sure that it is going to be a phenomenal experience for everybody involved.
It will be. We're really looking forward to it. And it'll happen twice a week on Wednesdays and Saturdays as we start out. And like you said, we have quite a few people signed up, but there may still be space for those who sign up to get one month for free.
Lisa, thank you again. And I want to wish you luck with both the Academy and with the Sparks, because, you know, when L.A. and New York do well, the leagues do well. So here's rooting for the Sparks this year.
All right, go Sparks. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.